National Socialism, Weltanschauung of Germany, and the worldview of Hitler has become synonymous with the race idea. However, it has done more to sully it than to glorify it. The race ideas embodied in pre-national socialist ideas was moving in the direction of what Trotsky called zoological materialism, regardless of the invention of the Nazis as codified in Hitler's Mein Kampf, and presumably would have culminated in this ideology regardless, and indeed did, owing to the sum total of all factors existent at that time, the conjuncture, in the words of the Marxist Althusser. Thus the Nazi ideology was the natural result of a biologistic materialistic Weltanschauung which derived from such as Darwin, Galton and Ernst Haeckel, and the subsequent eugenics movement in America and other nations. The Folkish ideology existed in Germany during the 19th century and was perpetuated in tandem with the aesthetic romanticism of Richard Wagner and even to some extent Nietzsche, whose ideas are spoken of as perversely distorted by the Nazis. This may be to some extent true, especially given the Jewish influences which presumably informed Nietzsche's cryptic Freemasonic Illuminist Dionysianism, his Wolsiermacht ethos of individualist Illuminism. However, Nietzsche had also some positive nationalistic sentiment, though critical of the German people, and this unduly and unjustly. The race idea of Nazism was formulated by the Thuggesellschaft, Dietrich Eckart, etc., and was embodied in Adolf Hitler as its prophet in his magnum opus. This is discussed extensively in by the lay scholar Peter Crawford's blog, who presumably intentionally or no draws false associations between the ideology and sex perversions. Guido von Liszt and Georg Lanz von Liebenfels informed the ideology of Arminist and Ariosophy and were critiqued by Hitler in Mein Kampf as grey-bearded wizened old men who were of no use to the National Socialists as a political ideology, or were at most stumbling block along its path or sources of escapist fantasy that lead astray from the concrete actualism of the political necessity of the times, and thus were subversive and divisive. Nonetheless, the neo-pagan Nordicist elements underpinned Hitler's worldview. He was a subscriber to Liebenfels' Ostara magazine and was involved in occultism in the Thuggesellschaft, which was an occult fraternity. The orientation of National Socialism nonetheless was concrete and political and attempted to assimilate these elements into itself, placing politics before the minutiae of what many have derisively called pagan reenactment, and which others would call a reawakening of the mythos of the blood. Blood and soil were the foundations of the Weltanschauung, a biological race in a terrestrial place, and were both essential pillars of the Temple of Wotan that was being constructed by Hitler. The biologistic and naturalistic emphasis to the exclusion of all else rendered National Socialism as a creed an excessively immanentist one which confined itself to the realm of Maya, illusion, this world or worldliness, without any principle of transcendence or higher planes. As such, it was not a sustainable creed, as having no spiritual dimension save that which was soulish, that which remained within the dimension of the phenomenal world of generation and corruption, and which lacked any transcendent principle of being that attuned oneself to deity. In spite of Hitler's references to the Lord and his alleged Catholic background, his entire philosophy lacked any spiritual dimension, though it incorporated within itself elements from the tradition of Hyperborean that led to a spiritual awakening, such as the runes and the deities which participated in their one God, Allfather, as hypostases, such as the, et al. The Catholic encyclical of Pope Pius XI Mit Brennendes Auge reveals the position of the Pope that National Socialism was a spiritually dead, particularistic, naturalistic worldview which lacked the figure of Christ and thus was considered heresy. Be that as it may, the worldview is consistent with that of the Jews, at least in broad outline, in terms of their pantheistic naturalism, differing therefrom in positing the necessity of the preservation of a differentiated order over and against the Jewish pantheism of an undifferentiated chaos, with themselves in place of the Jews as the master people, only as the honor people, not a slaver people of dishonorable rogues. Of course it was nonetheless supremacistic and expansionistic and allegedly entailed the extermination plan for many East Europeans as means of colonialist expansion, thus violating the autonomy of the East Europeans. Whether this is true or mere slander the writer is uncertain, but the tone and character of Mein Kampf itself, bellicose and supremacistic and almost certainly expansionistic and possibly exterminationistic in its Lebensraum protocol. However, not much evidence suggests this in practice, as the East Europeans were treated well enough by the Germans and historical contingencies necessitated their invasion of Poland. The ideology, though naturalistic, entails at least subtle hints of a form of emanationism or transcendent principle of deity, but the deity being a mere affirmation without much in the way of content flirts with the Kabbalistic Ansa IV of the Jew and posits man in relation to this god of forces, and thus accommodates a sort of cryptic Luciferianism where man and his supremacy is emphasized through instead confining it to the merely material plane, where the superman of Nietzsche is indeed perverted and distorted into a violent and aggressive blonde beast, thus transforming the spiritual man of Hyperborea and Atlantis, the blue-eyed and blonde-haired pure Nordic, into a mere animal man bereft of spiritual life. This may very well have been the intention of the Jews, and defiling and sacrificing the Hyperborean stock and their descendants, the Germans, through continuing the National Socialist ideology in the first place. However, whether Hitler was who he is claimed to be and not merely an actor as well as the entire National Socialist worldview is a question the writer cannot answer. The Jews are notorious for setting up others and the casualties of the World War, which was justified on the basis of the alleged and apparent aggression of the Nazis. This itself may have been a Kabbalistic ritual, with the war beginning in 1938. 38 being the number of death, and ending in 1945. The Holocaust industry and the suppression of all racial ideas subsequent to the World War through its serving as a trauma-based mind control ritual served the Jews in taking over the once white world and muddying it with their non-white hordes, as the French Revolution had also served to eliminate their aristocratic competition and to install themselves in a position of greater power. Thus the dialectic of the Enlightenment may have created the National Socialist regime from the beginning, and or used it for their own purposes. Oswald Spengler's aggressive tone and concomitant ideas as embodied in Prussianism and Socialism served as a forerunner of Nazi ideology, and since he was 1/8 Jewish and installed in the Jewish-influenced Prussian regime, the entire history of National Socialism may simply have used the Germanic nationalist sentiment against the German people as means of painting them with the black brush of the black magician Jews. The philosophy or Weltanschauung of National Socialism is embodied most thoroughly in Mein Kampf and the Myth of the 20th Century of Alfred Rosenberg. Rosenberg's work, derived from such sources as Gnosticism and Marcion, as the work Gnostic Origins of Alfred Rosenberg's Thought by the scholar James Whisker details. Rosenberg affirmed a Nordico-Aryan Christ as far as the writer can recall, and condemned the Catholic Church as a crucible of Syro-African demonology. This is partly correct, especially as Rome's decline and fall was brought about by the intrusion of Near Eastern and Mediterranean traders, the mongrel parasite caste turning Rome into a cloaca gentium, which was then hijacked by the Jews and formed into the Church and subsequent Dark Age and mass murder of Aryans as the Church spread its dark presence over the Holy Empire. Rosenberg's work is largely an attempt to refute the Catholic Church, which apparently has accommodated Jew throughout its history through the work of Morris Pinner. The plot against the Church contends otherwise. Most of the National Socialist writings, especially as outlined in the works of Helmut Storecht and Richard Walter, were of a naturalistic organicist orientation, and thus their term Blood and Soil, part of the title of Dar's work and the title Frossenberg's smaller book, illustrate this emphasis, which is again restrictive to the purely phenomenal world of becoming, or Maya, the world, the here and now and its transience. However, there were almost certainly other dimensions, as the Nazi leadership themselves evince, as in the case of Himmler, who was a Hindu in the Vedic sense presumably, and who was instrumental in attempting to recover the Aryan tradition via the Ahnenurb, making investigations into Tibet and their Baltic and North Sea region, as well as other ancient sites. Anton Holzner's work also suggested an attempt at creating a Christianity oriented along the lines of Meister Eckhart, a mystical pantheism with elements of Christianity in its doctrinal form. Perhaps this was a necessity at the time of Meister Eckhart, as well as that of Hitler, to assimilate the penned-up flock of the Catholic Church into their own fold and shepherd them towards what they believed to be the truth and the light, and to further disempowerry. Perhaps, however, as the fruitage of National Socialism has borne out the pestilential miasma from the East, were more greatly empowered both materially and demonically than disempowered. This is a difficult question to answer, as, according to Miguel Serrano, the Gnostic creator of esoteric Hitlerism, Hitler lost in the material but won in the spiritual, as his ideas won out is the necessity of the usage of material force on the part of the allies of Judeo-Masonry proved, as a means of gaining a Pyrrhic victory in the material world, and thus they lost in the spiritual plane. Whether the Christian doctrine of winning by losing is true, and the race ideas codified in Mein Kampf and the myth of the 20th century will win out in the end has yet to be seen. Julius Evola's work Notes on the Third Reich reveals criticism of the Third Reich, of National Socialism as an ideology, as does his works The Myth of the Blood and Synthesis of Racial Doctrine. However, his insight is motivated largely by bias towards the purer Aryan stock, and thus canonly be viewed as a partial truth. Blood, as Evola contends, transcends mere biological materialistic states of being, as bios means life in Greek, and extends beyond the visible and tangible dimension, and thus any sound mythos of the blood does not confine itself to the world of becoming. Perhaps the writer is wrong in his evaluation, however, of the Nazi mythos as presented in Rosenberg and Hitler's works. The former wrote against another presumed agent, Ludwig Klages, who was attempting to bring down the National Socialist worldview to the level of immanentism and attempting to propound the worthlessness and indeed the negative value of intellect, though Rosenberg himself stated that intellect was adversary of the soul. Klages was banned, as were all manner of other occultist agents who tied into the Judeo-Masonic pantheistic naturalism, and thus it is inferable that National Socialism was a Weltanschauung that opposed all of the pantheistic naturalism of the Jews and the Masonic collaborators, banning the Masonic lodges of subversion and the Jews themselves. Sound policy indeed. Rosenberg's philosophy and Hitler's as well were perhaps too oriented towards the naturalistic sphere, and yet to the extent they affirmed life and conceptualized it in language and symbol, they are correct. Perhaps this was limited, this race idea of necessity, owing to the time and pressure under which they had to work to salvage their race itself. Perhaps the Weltanschauung was in process of further elaboration and, standing on truth, a provable and testable foundation required further research, and this was the purpose of the Ahnenurb. The writer, being a layman and not a member of any initiatic school of mysteries, can only evaluate things from frog perspective, from the bottom looking up, amidst the quagmire of Judeo-Masonry, and thus can only affirm that the Nazis got it right, in a qualified way, and only as a partial truth. The pieces of the puzzle are deliberately obscured by Dre, but truth will reveal itself someday, even should the world of Meyer undergo a destructive cataclysm, leaving nothing but rubble behind. In such an event, the Hyperborean mythos will remain redeemed as the truth of the race idea, and will exist regardless of the culture destroyer's influence having its place in the Akashic records and the higher planes. Evola's racial doctrine. Julius Evola, a Sicilian nobleman and esotericist, was throughout his life what he would describe as a man of race, one who embodied in himself an integrated tripartite form of being, body, soul and spirit. That this work concerns itself exclusively with the Aryan race necessarily follows, given that it propounds such a conception of race, race of the body, of the soul and of the spirit, the latter element being the exclusive property of the Aryan race. According to Evola, race is a profound force which manifests itself both within the corporeal frame and within the animic spiritual frame. Those who are not men of race in the sense of tripartite integration but follow deviant paths or are hopelessly mongolized beyond redemption, having an inner schism of body, soul and spirit, will create inharmony in the nation and further degrade the racial type, opening up their soul to destructive influences and bringing all into the nadir of the Kali Yuga. In order to avoid the fate of disintegration, Evola advances a conception of race essentially dynamic, competitive and antagonistic, one against the cycles of time. The elements of racial education begins by examining the definitions of race formulated by contemporary bioanthropologists and racial psychologists, spoken of at greater length in The Myth of the Blood. The definition aids the reader in understanding what doctrines came before and their inadequacy subspecie aeternitatis. Evola seeks to connect the physical bodies of men with the appropriate spiritual forces for the creation of a true aristocracy, one not rooted in a decadent rigid caste based on heredity, but rather in a fluidic hierarchy in an organic state ruled by a new aristocracy of blood, soul and spirit, a super race adhering to the maxim sum cic, each member attaining their place in the state on the basis of both their inner and outer qualities. This is not to say that he outlines a universal prescription for all of the subtypes of the white race. This would be conflictual with his conception of a differentiated order. The doctrine in question, if correctly understood, can instead represent a strengthening and a further instrument of fascism, as the creator of a new anti-universalistic, anti-rationalistic, anti-individualism civilization. Evola emphasizes that his task is a matter of life or death for the future of the entire European civilization. Further, the task of racial education is not environmentalists in the sense of a theoretical reliance upon external factors in society or the natural environment. For Evola, to be racist means to be explicitly aware and to know concretely that it is forces rooted inside of us, and not the mechanical and impersonal forces of the environment, that are really determining for our life, our character and our vocations. Race is not a deterministic conception of the heritage gathered from the ancestors and transmitted to the descendants, but rather which is a legacy that can be used or misused by its inheritors. The task of racial education is to prescribe a correct usage of this inheritance and its attunement to the divine will embodied in the race and personalities of the men of race. As discussed in Synthesis of Racial Doctrine, Evola's racism is both anti-rationalist, anti-individualist and anti-evolutionary. In place of the rationalist universalism of Judeo-Masonry, he affirms the innate qualities of race which are specific to the Nordico-Aryan race and its subtypes, the qualities of character, the feeling of honor, courage and fidelity in the intimate attitude towards the world and life. These are the defining traits of Aryan nobility. He posits this in contradistinction to the men without qualities of humanist anti-race, the individual. These innate qualities are vested in the personality, not the individual, it's modern and tepid. The personality is something organic, all that is blood, lineage and tradition are its constitutive and inseparable elements, so that, from the strengthening of these values propitiated by racism, presumably it can only emerge strengthened and confirmed. The starting point is an inner examination, meant to discover the fundamental element in us, the own nature or spiritual races in accordance with which we must essentially act. His conception of race adheres to his ethical ontological conceptions, which are encapsulated in the titles of two of his most prominent works, Ride the Tiger and Revolt Against the Modern World -in the former cases, in the latter the racial idea orients around individuation, form and the preservation and spiritualization of material forms incarnating the racial souls of their particular collective consciousness of differentiated groups of the white race. The elements of racial education was intended by its author Baron Julius Evola as a distillation of Heyse's larger theoretical works on race, One being the critical The Myth of the Blood, which synopsized and critiqued the various anthropological racial theories prevalent at the time of its writing. The Myth of the Blood critically examines prior bioanthropological and socioanthropological works, starting with Arthur Comte de Gobine's essay on the inequality of human races and Chedorlaomp Algerian, up to the time of its publication in 1937. Evola treats of the theories of Houston Stuart Chamberlain, the theory of heredity deriving from Gregor Mendel and reiterated by Francis Galton, Ernst Haeckel and Darwin and their descendants in the Third Reich, Hitler, H. F. K. Gunther, and his typology of Aryan subtypes and non-Aryan groups and Alfred Rosenberg. In Synthesis of Racial Doctrine, a more positivistic work, Evola amplifies the racial doctrine herein condensed, a tripartite racial typology of Aryan man. Evola listened to the call of the blood, the mythos of the blood, not the falsified dogma of the mythologization of the blood as was current in his time amongst the Semitic schools of Boas, Freud, Husserl, Bissant and Jaspers, which he critiqued in the work The Mask and Face of Contemporary Spiritualism. Instead, he affirmed an authentic racial doctrine corresponding to the reality of life embodied by the authentic man, the man of race, whose body, soul and spirit exist in a harmonious relationship as different yet integrated aspects of existence. The racist vision of life, says Evola, is symbolic. The inside manifests itself in the outside. What is external is symbol, sign and symptom of something internal. Racism in the sense of Evola is necessarily traditionalist, as all traditions properly so-called derive from a race and are compatible only with that racial soul in order to be authentic. The deep substratum of any tradition worthy of the name is the blood, the living race. Thus tradition is grounded in the type, inheres in the blood and is an epiphenomenon thereof. All culture is a concretion of a biological type at all ontological levels, body, soul and spirit, and all of that which is not derived from thence is merely the distorted amalgam of anti-race. Religions such as Hinduism, contemporary Buddhism, Christianity exemplify this expression of Volk chaos, a cacophony of disparate stocks mixing, but never forming any stable bond between them. For Evola, races are not purely physical or mechanistic in the sense of natural science, and are not the external forms themselves, but the potentialities, the constant ways of reacting conformity with certain laws. The variation of the phenotype, the physical form or appearance, is not essential, but temporary and illusory. The potentiality remains intact, similar to the original type. Evola's conception of physical racial groups subdivides according to the classification of H.F.K. Gunther, Nordic and Western races, Falian and Dinaric, Alpine Eastern and Baltic Eastern, each of which, though mixed to a degree over millennia of conflict and congress with other non-Aryan groups, nevertheless forms in principle a type which is peculiar to itself, its own body, soul and spirit, and which could reappear and reassert itself at least in Thebes specimens, with appropriate prophylactic, that is, eugenic measures. Racism in Evola's sense necessarily goes to consider as more normal and regular these forms of civilization of the early days, where mixings had not yet reached such a point and where one can legitimately suppose the existence of sufficiently unaltered primary ethnic nuclei. The proto-Nordic Aryan race, the divine or heavenly races of remarkable spiritual stature, are they from whom the modern Aryan subtypes are involuted products and mixtures with absolutely inferior and extinct races, creating the fallen man of today. Evola's project is one of the redemption of this divine quality. The infiltrations of alien races, Levantine race, desert race, a Mongoloid race, Negroid and Mediterranean African race, the Jewish element, are the dross which Evola seeks to purge as means of purifying and thereby strengthening the Aryan type. One means of achieving this is the existence or establishment of favorable conditions in the countryside and in nature, insane customs and insane occupations, such as those which existed in traditional societies and which are catalysts of the original Nordic Aryan spirit and the creation of the thoroughbred man. This work is a template for our times. Ivola propounded the doctrine of race contained within a didactic guideline for racial education for fascist Italy under Mussolini. However, his work is necessarily that which transcends time, as it is intended to be viewed sub specie aeternitatis. It is to be applied in time and adjusted for differentiating factors, body, soul and spirit. It is a template for genetico-spiritual eugenics against the current dysgenics of Judeo-Masonry and a solution to the mongolization agenda of what is euphemistically called multiculturalism. His work is a weapon designed to counter what he called the integrationist fanaticism of Judeo-Masonry and the mainstream religious hierarchy and its paradoxical disintegrative outcome, a society of discord amidst the jarring cacophony of bog chaos, with Evola's prescription of a higher form of integration of both person and the people with whom they belong. In order to redeem themselves, the Aryan races must extricate themselves from the slime pits in which they have allowed themselves to be ensnared. This is the task of the elements of racial education, to prescribe a formula for eugenical improvement of the varied subtypes of Aryan man, to consolidate a type in its essential elements and discard the dross, both in genetics, behaviorally and spiritually. Hence, racialist research cannot be quantitative. It must go beyond the numerically predominant common outer elements. It must discover the purest representative of the given type, and to discover what animates it, that is its inner race too, and, therefore, to have the sense of the original unity in which the various elements of the race come together. This work is a living work, as it is a necessary condition of the continuance of the being of Aryan man in all of his differentiated subtypes and their becoming who they are in essence. Failure to adopt the elements contained herein and to implement them both in one's life on a personal level in relations with others and in the establishment of an organic state is tobbering about the destruction of all in the name of a bastardized oneness of Judeo-Freemasonic humanities. Hence the ethical imperative this work represents as a true education for the man of race, a leader of the type to which he belongs as an aristocrat of blood, soul and spirit. Racism in the sense of Evola is thus an ethical imperative, the conditio sine qua non of one's being a person of Aryan kind attuned to the spiritual formation of his race and living in accordance therewith. This will essentially preserve the type or racial of a soul which gives rise to his being and create a harmonious state of being for his collective and for himself. The animic spiritual frame that circumscribes both race of the soul and of the spirit Evola amplifies through differentiating these two facets of race. The race of the soul determines character, sensitivity, natural inclination, style in action and reaction, and attitudes towards one's own experiences. The discipline whose subject matter it is he designates psychoanthropology, it correlates with the psychological predispositions of the racial subtypes as per Ludwig Klaus and critiqued in the Mythos of the Blood. Race and heredity are to be conceived as forces, as potentialities, as formative energies from within and, to some extent, even from above. This, according to Evola, is the classical tendency of racism, will to form, aversion for the promiscuous, reassumption of the principles of our ancient wisdom, that is, know yourself and be yourself. Fidelity to one's nature, that is to say, to one's own blood and one's own race. All forms of culture are either authentic or inauthentic, and Evola seeks to attune the degraded remnant of the Aryan race in its component parts body, soul and spirit to bring it to a state where it can attain an authentic tradition suitable to itself and lead the way back to the heritage of light, the light of the north of the Aryan race in its Hyperborean origins. In short, to reanimate the zombified corporeal form of Aryan man through an attunement to the divine will. The tradition of a race comprises its various cultural, artistic, religious, ethical forms, which are manifestations of the race of the soul and of the spirit. The so-called culture of the modern world, that which the National Socialists called entität culture is the inauthentic result of anti-race. An example of an inauthentic man, one not of race but a ruin, is the current bourgeois intellectual in modern Western civilization, an effeminized type who exists purely in a deviant form adopting a Jewish Dionysian hedonistic motivation and a lunar feminine consciousness. Such a man is anatomically male only and fails the standard of a spiritual virility that a masculinist embodies, one who is a man of race in the solar Olympian sense. The place of women in Evola's masculinist racial conception adheres to the classical maxim of some Kik, neither too high in social position as in the societies of the lunar and Demetrian race, nor too low as in the case of Asian societies. The libertinism inherent in liberalism and the despotism inherent in Near East and Abrahamic religion are both superseded with woman occupying her normal role in traditional Aryan society. The form in which a culture and a tradition crystallizes is that of the organic state. For Evola in the fascist idea, the state is the instrument of a political elite, of the best part of the nation. With racism, this elite is meant to reassume the heritage of the higher race and tradition existing in the national composite. Evola stated, "I'm not a fascist. I'm a super fascist." His fascist conception purported to transcend the fascism of Il Duce Mussolini and the bourgeois philosopher Giovanni Gentile as expounded upon him there the doctrine of fascism. In his work Heathen Imperialism, Evola critiques this bourgeois state fascism and propounds the superior state form as the basis for an authentic tradition in the classical spirit of the Aryan solar Uranian consciousness, which for Italians specifically means that the super race of the Italian nation is the race of Rome. The Aryo-Roman race. In the elements of racial education, the project entails both a negative eugenics, which Evola calls prophylactic racism or racial prophylaxis, and a positive eugenics that spans the tripartite conception for races of the body, soul and spirit. Racial prophylaxis is a cleansing or negrido phase of the transmutation of the fallen subtype of the Aryan race and has a twofold form: a defense against mixture between incompatible types, which he outlines, and an isolation of elements in which race is already affected. An excision, so to speak, of degraded or disintegrative elements in the composite subtypes in question, a purification of the type through, in its positive phase, an action of strengthening and inner selection. The strengthening of the Aryan subtype entails a positive aspect of mate selection in accordance with the ancient Aryan teachings about race, only modified by the knowledge of contemporary eugenics and physical bioanthropology. In a crossbreeding, the masculine heredity would basically have the dominant character, the feminine one, on the other hand, the recessive one, meaning that the male genetico-spiritual race modifies that of the females such that weak and inferior males degrade the type, but weaker and inferior females do not necessarily do so but are merely assimilated to the male stock. This applies only with incompatible types of the Aryan race as a whole and spans the tripartite form of race. Thus, in place of the miscegenation prescribed by the hidden hand of the dark forces, is posited a eugenics-oriented selectivity based upon the classical, Aryan tradition. Evola's intent is to enhance everything that is superior and essential and differentiated in the face of the promiscuous, the acquired, and the constructed. The racial idea outlined by Evola condemns the ruin involved in miscegenation or so-called race mixing, who he castigates as committing an utter treachery towards his own blood and his ancestors, and a crime in regard to one's descendants. This contrary to the contemporary falsifiers of Evola's ideas, who would attempt to distort his conceptions to accommodate their globalist anti-race agenda. They would attempt to pervert interpreting his ideas of race as merely a mystical state of quasi-free Masonic Gnostic illumination, only of a more nebulous Abrahamic variety, with an oligarchy of aristocrats of the soul, having no relationship with the race of the first degree, the body. Such, as outlined in his racial works, is clearly not the case, which explains why they're comparatively rare as deliberately neglected by mainstream publishers such as Arctos, Inner Traditions and Countercurrents. contrary to this nebulous universalism, Evolaris chooses and condemns miscegenation or compatible racial mixing, stating emphatically that when heterogeneous races cross, a disharmony and often an inner fragmentation comes about. Such a mixture forms no stable bond at any higher level, and thus leads to the disintegration of the race should prophylactic measures not be taken. These hybrids create mixed-up persons, the inner force exhausting itself in all conflicts and functions of all sorts. In this hybridization of races, only a certain cell presence or creative tension with incompatible types may overcome that fragmentation, and should that tension be lacking, the types cannot be said to be compatible. Only the combination of elements that maintain the supportive conditions of the main core of the race in question can avoid the disintegrative process, and this he emphasizes especially in the spiritual field. Miscegenation stems from the motivations of the weak links of the race, those whose arbitrariness of will and passivity towards the impulses and feelings of his body leads them to partake of the forbidden fruit of the racial foreigner. For Evola, such a deviant constitute is an utter treachery towards his own blood and his ancestors, and a crime in regards to one's descendants. Over and against such deviant corruption, Evola's racial idea is formulated to curtail the dysgenics of modernity and the triumph of the undemon through the democratic weight of numbers, the reign of quantity. The race of the spirit lies within the realm of spiritual being, and all of that which is bound up there with that which transcends petty temporality and codifies itself in speculative systems, myths and symbols, and in the diversity of religious experience itself. It is a separate yet integral discipline for racial education, which serves as the trajectory of all sub-disciplines and constitutes the very purpose of Aryan life. Similar to Alfred Rosenberg, though positioned at the Olympian height of spirit, Evola focuses on the inner race and does not fall into excessive naturalism, which other contemporary racial theorists have done in stating, the outer is a function of the inner, the physical form is the instrument, expression and symbol of a psychic form, which parallels the words of the German ideologue, race is the image of soul. Only here race is portrayed in its inner dimension to a much greater degree and, unlike Rosenberg and other national socialist racial theorists, is emphasized and given priority, spirit over matter, yet animating and elevating it. The race of the spirit encompasses the essential, the living race, the sense of connection not so much with the works of our ancestors as with the very forces from which such was derived in them, forces which continue in our blood, in the most mysterious and sacred strata of our being. The subcategories of the race of the spirit Evola presents are sevenfold and to be found to varying degrees in each of the subtypes of the physical races of the Aryan, save perhaps a few which are diametrically opposed to the solar Olympian super race inherent in and defining all Aryan mankind. In the solar or Olympian race, the suprahuman element predominates as its fundamental trait, connoted by the term Aryan. The soul or style of soul most consonant with the Nordic physical type is that of the race of the active man, of the man who feels that the world is represented to him as material for possession and attack. The antipode of the Aryan is the telluric, tectonic, earthly subterranean race of the spirit, which could perhaps best be described as infernal, and whose foremost representative is the anti-race Jew, which is treated of at greater length in Evola's work Three Aspects of the Jewish Problem. Other Aryan racial subtypes of the spirit are discussed and further expanded upon in Synthesis of Racial Doctrine, the Lunar, Demetrian, the Titanic, the Amazonian, which race in its essence is lunar feminine, but which assumes affirmative, virile, forms of expression, the Aphrodisian, the Dionysian, and the race of the heroes, the latter being a sort of classical tragic spiritual form with elements of the Dionysian, perhaps best embodied in the figures of Thor and Hercules. These racial subtypes are correlated with both the second and first degree of race in both authentic and inauthentic ways, the physical race being, though Evola does not explicitly state, presumably a concretion of the higher forms on the basis of the Hermetic principle that which is above is like unto that which is below. Those physical races who have assumed or who have become entangled in inauthentic forms of soul or spirit through inner decadence or being overcome by a greater force would be considered inauthentic men, not men of race but ruins of the former Hyperborean archetype from which they have already degraded. For example, a dolichocephalic Western Aryan and Nordic man would be a man of race insofar as he adheres in his style of living and adherence to the tradition of the spiritual solar race. Such a man of race will model his life on action and a detachment from the veil of Maya, a resistance to the current of disintegration, the corrosive waters of the cycles of time as spoken of in Evola's magnum opus, revolt against the modern world, as well as ride the tiger and to some extent the doctrine of awakening, his work on originary Buddhism. Evola discusses the Aryan racial subtypes and their Nordico-Western origin. He critiques the biblical notion that civilization emanates from the Near Eastern Mediterranean and the Darwinian mythology of a common African origin which supports it, and instead posits the true paleohistorical origin, which is the current Arctic area. He covers mainstream archaeological ground which necessitates this conclusion, an inconvenient truth for the Semitophilic culture of modernity. The Aryan is the originator of civilization which bears his stamp globally in decayed remnants of subsequent mixtures and archaeological and linguistic cognates. However, the Nordico-Aryan thesis Evola propounds denies to any current people the right to corner or monopolize the nobility of our common origin, as there are no current Aryan subtypes who are pure or purely representative of the Hyperborean archetype. This leads Evola to the problem of Latinity, or the Latin myth, which he attempts to clarify of its false historical contaminations. The popular notion of Latin possesses meaning only on the aesthetic, humanistic, and literary planes, in the world of arts and culture, in the most superficial sense of the word. This is a distortion of the proper meaning of the term. Its true origin, Evola proves, is as a designator of peoples whose racial and spiritual kinship with the group of the Nordico-Aryan peoples is, for every competent person, incontrovertible. He evidences this claim by asserting that the Aryan primordial races are both the Nordico-Atlantic ones and the Nordico-Scandinavian ones. The Dorian migrations into the Mediterranean culminated in the Spartans, who were characterized by the cult of Apollo as solar Hyperborean god, and this is one of the originary formations of the Mediterranean Nordico-Aryan strain. Evola further goes on to analyze the problem of Latinity and how it became contaminated with influences of Italic pre-Aryan strata and therefore culminated in degenerate Aryan civilizations of a composite Romanity, an overlay upon the latent Aryan Romanity of Hyperborean extraction. He states, emphasizing the task that in racial education it is of capital importance to bring to light such divergences as a means of purifying the race of its non-Aryan dross. This is to be achieved in reconstructing the imperial mission of Aryo-Roman stock discoverable in the customs, cults, rituals and institutions of ancient Rome. The ideal Roman type or super race of Evola he delineates according to his tripartite schema of race. Physically, psychologically and spiritually, the third degree, that of the spirit. This type is outlined in terms of its essential qualities. It is dolichocephalic, has a prominence of the forehead. It has neither thick eyebrows nor fleshy lips, etc. Psychologically, its behavioral qualities and tendencies express themselves in a greater dynamism, which is nonetheless controlled, clear-headed, possessed of a dominant attitude, with meditated resoluteness, etc. Its ethics embody the classical virtues of Rome, neither moralistic nor reactionary, virtus, fortitudo, constantia, sapientia, humanitas, disciplina, gravitas, dignitas, solemnitas, fides. The spiritual form of the super race embodies a feeling of respect for the divine, yet not the Semitic servility towards the divinity. The Roman ideal for Evola subsumes a conscious and resolute action, could be considered as continuation of the divine will itself. The task of fascist Italy in the time of Evola is still valid for our time today. to create an environment saturated with spiritual forces and heroic vocations, we shall reproduce the climate needed by the super-us, which is ours to awaken. The impetus of the ideas of blood, of race, is thus necessary to avoid the collectivist leveling of a quantitatively based demo-Masonic dystopia. Evola says we must see to it that race a heroic and aristocratic meaning. That Aryan has aristocratic as a linguistic cognate underscores this point. Evola's curriculum vitae outlining the fundamental principle of a complete racism is an attempt to guide the Aryan race out of the quicksand of disintegration and to a sound understanding of its life task. It is an attempt to reorient the trajectory of the will of the Aryan in opposition to the cycles of time following the counterclockwise path of the swastika, the path of spiritual viridity, of power. To purify oneself, one's racial subtype and the Aryan race as a composite whole of the dross of accumulated decadence is the golden target. The elements of racial education is the arrow that bows the race and the will the motive force. It behooves the Aryan of today, living in the nadir of the Kali Yuga, to follow the path laid out in this didactic work of Baron Julius Evola, and to become who he still remains in germ, like Evola, a man of race. The racial education Evola offers is a racial purity spiral exerting a centrifugal force and working against the cycles of time in a leftwards motion following the path of the swastika of the Aryan towards the center and Olympian height of Hyperborea in a new golden age. Christ identity, kosher Oprah white soup. The creed of Christian identity purports to be the real and genuine Christianity in contradistinction to the version most people are acquainted with and which those espousing the former call Judeo-Christianity. Thus a distinction is made prima facie between that which is authentic and that which is inauthentic. The creed differentiates itself from its rival on a fundamental basis, making of the two apparently wholly distinct and thus incompatible or irreconcilable doctrines. Whether this is merely an apparently insuperable division or no will be further discussed and analyzed in the following treatment of what Christian identity purports to be and whether it practices what it preaches, whether it is what it claims to be and is not something completely different. The following treatment of the subject is necessarily semi-autobiographical, written from the perspective of someone who had involved himself in this ideological facet of the white racialist movement. He and who gravitated towards it must be conceded out of an earnest hope that Christian identity might be the real Christianity and yo ipso might offer a hope to white salvation such that the Jewish tyranny would be destroyed and the white race liberated from their iron grip through the conversion of Judeo-Christians to Christian identity, from the raceless universalism of the former to the racial exclusivity of the latter. Whether he believed in the creed as an objective reality, he could only claim to be of an ambivalent and vacillatory mind, at times being a true believer and at others a completely cynical pragmatist, merely placing his faith in Christian identity as a tool or utilitarian means to pry the Jewish parasite formed the host body through the conversion of the Christian masses to the truth. If only they would believe it, it would pound perhaps the final nail into the coffin of Jewry. The creed of identity can be synopsized as follows, as any brief search on a search engine will reveal: 1. Dual seed line and 2. Single seed line, the former claiming that the Israelites, those who are the chosen people chosen by a somehow absolute, yet strangely anthropomorphic and finite deity, those who are Israel, who are men, ruling with God, presumably the demiurge Saturn Jehovah, who these ideologues claim is named Yahweh, are the white race, properly, according to their theology, called Adamic, which term is allegedly Paleo-Hebrew, a language allegedly spoken by whites around the time of Christ and means to be of ruddy complexion or to show blood in the face, to be capable of blushing, the exclusive property of the white race. Within this version of identity, the white Adamic race are the children of God and have an exclusive covenant with this deity Yahweh for global dominion, also called the Dominion Mandate. They claimed that there were other so-called men who preceded Adam, and that these are the non-white races who aren't a result of mixture with the Adamites or with the fallen angels who are the progenitors of the Jews with Eve, the white female who then bore Cain and whose descendants became the Jews, ancestors of the scripturally saw, Canaanites, etc., and Arabs. The white race they claim migrated from the Tarim Basin in Central Asia to all of what are known white in the contemporary diaspora of the Israelites, which constitutes retroactive proof of their lineage as the 12 tribes of Israel. Of course, as some of the identity proponents such as James Wickstrom claim, the 12 tribes also represent the 12 signs of the zodiac which were ostensibly named after them. The alleged son of Yahweh is the Christ, who is somehow an absolutely perfect, infinite being who concentrates himself into finite form, which is only possible to make sense of in some quantum metaphysical mental gymnastics vis. Being fractally represented or manifested in this finite animate form. The only other way this could make any sense, of course, is allegorically as an archetype of man perfected, or Christ consciousness, or some such state of heightened spiritual elevation. This the author in his finite and low state of mind is unable to articulate in any more contained practical terms, and which state of being almost certainly is ineffable and can only be embodied, if ever attainable, and would probably be called Luciferian more than Christian, the latter entailing a presumed obsequious subordination to external authority and not the God within.